Welcome back to the Wise Athletes Podcast. Today, on episode number 92, we are joined by Dr. Ebony Rio to learn about recovering from painful knees that steal our athleticism and keep us from living the life we want. Dr. Rio is both a researcher and a clinician, which gives her a deep understanding about knee issues and how to guide people back to strong, functional athleticism. I have knee pain, and it has been getting worse. Over the last year, I have been trying different practices that I found online, but nothing worked, and I fear only made my pain worse. But in the last month, following Dr. Rio's protocol for patellofemoral pain, I have had a stunning reduction in my knee pain. I am not out of the woods yet, but I am definitely on the right track. Now that I know what to do, I will never stop. If you have chronic or recurring knee pain, or even if you just want to learn about keeping your knees healthy, you should listen to my talk with Dr. Rio. This is a game changer. All right, let's talk to Dr. Rio. Dr. Ebony Rio, welcome to the Wise Athletes Podcast.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm very thrilled to chat with you this morning or this evening or whatever time it is for you, but it's bright and early here in Melbourne.
Yes. Well, thanks for joining us from all the way on the other side of the planet. What is the weather like in April in Melbourne, Australia?
Melbourne is always a little bit random. Today it's going to be a beautiful 25, but that means it'll probably rain tomorrow because that's just how we roll.
I got you. Well, good. It's raining right now here, so I guess it's not all that different. Well, so let's jump in here. We only have a little bit of time together. Let me start off with the way I always do with the Wise Athletes Podcast is for the older endurance athlete. As endurance athletes, our legs need to carry us far. And joint pain or tendon pain is a terrible obstacle to living the life that we want. I have read that 1 in 4 adults will have chronic knee pain, and I am among them. So for our chat today, what I'd like to focus on, and I know that your knowledge and experience goes beyond this, but I would like to focus our limited time on the oh-so-common anterior, which I now know means front of knee pain.
Perfect, yes.
Yeah, great. So if the audience is understanding, and correct me if I'm wrong, that is the patellofemoral joint pain, which is sort of like the under the kneecap type area, the patellar tendinopathy, so that would be the tendon below the kneecap, and then the quad tendon, which is above the kneecap. And in those cases, for those tendons, it would be a tendinopathy. And not that long ago, everybody heard of that as tendinitis, but we don't call it that anymore for reasons that I'm sure you'll be able to explain. What do you think? Can we go through that?
Yeah, perfect. Spot on. So you're right. The kneecap, the patella, is involved in a lot of knee pain for runners. It's our most common presentation, far more common than the quadriceps tendon problems or the patella tendon problems. We see those in sort of weightlifting athletes for the quad tendon, and we see more jumping athletes for the patella tendon. But running is all about that patellofemoral joint that you mentioned, that underneath the kneecap.
Great, great. Yeah, and I am not a runner. I am a cyclist, and I also have, I believe, the patellofemoral joint pain. But in any case, before we dive too deep into that stuff, I wonder if for our audience's sake, you can give us a little bit about your background. How did you become so knowledgeable about this?
So my background is I love sport. I love being active. And I what you said at the start really resonated. You know, we want our bodies to work for a long time and not just function, but function in a really positive way that enhances our life and keeps us doing the things we love. So I still play basketball, and I've had, you know, my fair share of injuries over the years, and I think that sort of got me interested in physio. And so I'm still a physio. I do research as well, but I still treat patients and athletes, which I love. It makes me better at research because all my research questions, Joe, are around what we could do better or why something didn't work or what we could do for an athlete in season. They're all really specific clinical questions. So at the moment, I split my time between the Australian Ballet, and they're just phenomenal, just an incredible group of people to work with, and I also work at our Victorian Institute of Sport. And then across both of those sites, I have a research role through the La Trobe Sport and Exercise Medicine Research Centre. So I'm very lucky because I get to do research and still help people one-on-one, and yeah, it's super fun. And I'm constantly learning, which I think you said at the start as well. I think we just like being sponges.
Right. Well, and you have a PhD in tendon pain, something like that?
I do. So my PhD was actually in the patellar tendon mainly, the tendon at the front of the knee. And then I went a little bit broader and was more interested in the neuroscience. So some of the changes in our brain with long-term tendon pain, and then how we could use some different techniques to kind of reverse those changes and help people, you know, get back to the sport they love. But I've ended up doing a lot of work in patellofemoral joint pain because there's a lot of similarities between the conditions. They're both really sort of devastating for people that can be devastating for people that have them. They can really impact their lives. And a lot of the symptoms are similar. So what I mean by that is a lot of different activities provoke both, which means for people out there, and yourself included, it can be hard to know which one you've got. And the treatment is a little bit different. So it's really important to help people understand the differences and what that means for what they need to do about it. That's the critical bit.
Yeah. And I think that business, they seem very similar in a lot of ways, and it's hard to tell them apart in some cases, is going to be really important here. We'll come back to that. But I wanted to say that I know that you do work. I mean, you're talking about ballet and how devastating, you know, knee issues can be for like professional athletes and things like that. And for the older athlete, it's similar, but different.
I agree. In
that we're not losing our livelihood, but it's important to our happiness, to our sense of ourselves, and
health, like mental and physical health. Absolutely. It's so important.
Totally. I have actually complained that I've been losing my athleticism. And I read something here recently that said that half of the reason, I think it was half, but some large percentage of the reason that older athletes get slower as they get older is because they don't train as much. It's not that they're getting older and that's why, it's because they don't train as much. Well, that hit me like a ton of bricks because I'm not training as much and I'm getting slower. And the reason that I'm not, I guess there's a few reasons, you know, life and such, but one of the reasons is that my knees are hurting me more. And so I can't do as much and then I need to recover more from it. And so I believe that my knees hurting me more is essentially changing who I am. It's changing how I move. It's lowered my ability to exercise the way I want. It's stealing my athleticism from me. My painful knees are making me feel old, and I'm sick of it. You think you can help me with this?
I reckon we can have a crack at it because
awesome.
You've hit the nail on the head. It's such a fundamental driver to so many people stopping being physically active, and not just physically active at an endurance amount, but for some people just even meeting some health, you know, enough minutes to be reasonably healthy and for all the other benefits. And interestingly, it's a little bit hard to capture or poorly reported in research actually, Joe, because sometimes people's pain severity doesn't give us the whole picture, because what people have changed is what they do. So it's impacted their life, they're doing less, so they're avoiding so that they keep their pain levels under control. And so sometimes patellofemoral joint pain is reported as self-limiting or mild, but what we don't get is the story behind that, which is what you've just described beautifully, that it's impacted your choices. It's taken away choices for you.
Okay, good. I want to start with, well, the next thing, not the very next thing, but the thing after that, I want to talk about where does this come from? Because I don't think that it's just aging, since it can happen to people at all ages. But I think that we ought to at least acknowledge that what a lot of people carry around in their heads about knee pain and pain in general is that, and let's just squash some of these myths, that people think pain is a signal for damage in their body and that it's getting worse and that's why it hurts. Or that damage is healed through resting and maybe
painkillers. And maybe it's arthritis, because arthritis comes with aging and with using my joints too much, and I can't undo that. It's permanent problems, and if I just got an MRI, it's going to look really bad, and that just proves it. You know, look how bad that looks. I got problems, and when I try to exercise, like they say, it just makes the pain worse, so that just proves that it's permanent, and I can't do anything about it, and maybe I should be thinking about replacing joints. So all of that sounds wrong to me. What about to you?
Yeah, there's so much there. Let me pull out a few things that stood out. So the first thing that we absolutely know that we can see lots and lots of changes in different joints, but you can't look at the changes and tell whether or not that person has pain. So there's a really, really poor relationship between, you know, the damage in inverted commas that we see on imaging and people's symptoms. We actually really don't fundamentally understand a lot of the mechanisms or the drivers in relation to why that's the case. Why do some people have joint pain when you don't see a lot going on their MRI? And why do some people have some joints that look, you know, pretty damaged, but they have zero pain? So if I imaged your knees, Joe, and I imaged a colleague that has no pain, they could look exactly the same, to be honest. They could look exactly the same, and I couldn't tell you which one is yours. So the first thing I want to say to people, and this, let's bust this myth, there's no relationship between ongoing symptoms and pain like this and your imaging. And the reason I've made that kind of distinction is if you have an acute injury, so if you do your ACL, the MRI can tell you you've done your ACL. So with an acute injury, imaging can help people, but with longer term symptoms, imaging becomes far less useful for us. And the second point you brought up is that it really worries people. It looks scary. People use scary words that make me not want to load my joint. And my joint might have looked like that for a long time, and I've just had a little bit of a flare, and I'd be far better off just getting my flare under control. So myth number one, judicious use of imaging, i.e. don't go get it. There'd be a really rare occasion that we would send someone like you for imaging. If someone has had imaging, then I spend most of my time really explaining it to them. And so a good example is the skin. You can get scars on your skin and it looks different, but it functions really well. And so we see that in joints. Joints don't look the same in our 60s as they do in our 20s, but they function really well. And just coming back to that key point, that just because you see some stuff on your imaging doesn't mean that it's damaged, and it doesn't mean that you're destined to have pain, and it doesn't mean that they need a replacement. So it's about, you know, if we think of the tissues around our joints and their job is to really absorb the load and move our joints. So that comes back to just how important our muscles and our tendons are, and that they can really make our joints feel, you know, way better. But again, our imaging won't change, but that's fine. That's not an outcome I care about.
Right. Okay, good. Well, let me see if I can't find the other side of that same coin here. I think that what is true, based on what you've said here and other places that I've been listening to you talk, is that, yeah, there can be structural changes in the joints and the tendons, and that change is ongoing. You can change them again for the better. If they have been changed for the worse, you can change them again for the better. That doesn't mean they're going to go back to the way they looked when you were 18 years old, but they can become strong and functional again. Is that right?
I love that. And actually, I'm going to give you a word for that. So Professor Lorimer Moseley, who's an amazing pain researcher, he coined the term bioplastic. And what that means, so if we're bioplastic, that means every single cell in our body is capable of change till the day we die, which means we have unbelievable cause for optimism, actually, because we have this amazing capacity to regenerate and turn tissue over and adapt. And it may not look the same, but you're right, we can be pain-free and functional. And a really great example, and I'm going to bust another myth for any of your listeners that are runners. We used to think that running was really bad for your knees. we fundamentally now know that it's not. Running's great. Running's fantastic. Cycling's fantastic. So if you've got pain doing those activities, it's about how we can address the reasons for that and get you back to what you love, because those activities are not damaging and they just have so many benefits for joints, muscles, tendons, but just our overall bodies and minds.
Fantastic. I think another thing to take away is that a healthy lifestyle can make a big difference in these making more structural changes for the good. So things that help with recovery, like good sleep and eating healthy food and that sort of thing, it would be helpful, but also exercise. Is that right?
Yep, absolutely. The benefits of exercise, you know, it's now been shown to be more effective than our most effective antidepressant drugs for people that have that meet the criteria for clinical depression. So not yeah. just for keeping our bodies and minds healthy if we don't have, you know, a diagnosed condition, even in people with diagnosed mental health conditions, it is unbelievably powerful. You know, the changes in your brain, the little neuronal connections when you do exercise, it's so fantastic. It keeps our minds healthy, and it just does wonderful, wonderful things, which is why we have to help people that have pain, because pain gets in the way of your ability to be physically active.
As far as this, why the exercise is good, it's probably worth diving into that just a little bit. But as I understand it, these tissues like cartilage and tendon and these things that don't have a really good blood flow, the way that they get nutrients is through the use of them. So the load on them and deloading is sort of like a sponge that you're squeezing and it's soaking up water and then squeezing and soaking up water. I mean, is that like a good analogy or is there a better way to talk about it?
No, that's a great analogy. So as you squash the cartilage down a little bit, and then as you said, deload, and it sort of bounces back, you get this fluid flow, and the nutrients come from the fluid moving with that motion. So activity is critical for the health of all of our tissues. And so if you take something like cycling, what a beautiful rhythmic, you know, massage for your knee cartilage. Delightful.
Awesome. Awesome. Okay. So all the more reason that we need to get the exercise. The problem is the pain. We have got to figure out how to get past the pain so that we can get back to the exercise. And so that gets us in really to the heart of what it is that you do. I think the way to start talking about that is to start by saying, what happened? Why do we have these pains, this whatever it is that is causing us to have this pain? What was, even though maybe it could have happened 1,000 different ways, what is the general description of what went wrong at the beginning?
Yeah, that's a really great question. And there's a couple of different theories or a couple of different possible contributors that for different people might be present in varying degrees. So you might have a bigger driver in one area, like your hip control, whereas mine might have been related to, you know, another injury and quadriceps. So if we just break that down a little bit, we used to think that the patellofemoral joint pain was patella malalignment, so that your kneecap wasn't sitting in its little groove properly and it was rubbing, and what we had to do was, you know, foam roller the outside of our leg and strengthen up our VMO, you know, the muscle on the inside of the knee. Yeah. And that's really outdated now. We now know that it's not a malalignment and it's not an imbalance of muscle strength. It's that your whole quadricep is down in terms of its function and probably its size. We know there's a big contributor from the hip. So your hip muscles control your thigh bone, and your thigh bone then really influences your knee angle. So just say you're cycling, Joe, your knee can go in a lot or it can go, you know, reasonably straight. And the more in it goes, either cycling or running, the more associated that is with this patellofemoral joint pain. And that's driven by your hip, actually. And then the third component of that is we know that the calf is critical. The calf absorbs a lot of load. And if the calf is not good enough. So the muscles on the back of your leg below your knee, if that's not good enough, we know that a lot of load goes to the anterior knee and the patellofemoral joint. Hmm. So what we need to be thinking about with knee pain is we may not be able to work out what of those drove it, because by the time you see me, they're probably all a bit down. And then you get in this cycle, because if you have pain, your quadricep muscle, your thigh muscle doesn't work as well. And then it gets weaker, and then you have more pain. And so this is one of the cycles that we have to break in relation to patellofemoral joint pain. And I talk about it with my patients. We need to find a way in. We know we need to get you stronger, but you love exercise. I don't need to sell exercise to you. I need to help you with the right exercise, the right strategies, and also when to listen. When is it okay to have some low and stable symptoms that's really safe? But when are we going to say, actually, you need to change what you're doing today, and here are some tools to do that? So that education is really important too. But to just wrap up and get back to your question, it can be a single event, so a big, you know, downhill running, you know, trail running event, or it can be the build up of a number of different factors, usually around the hip and the knee. We used to think it's more common in women. We also know now that it's really common in men. We're learning more and more about it, but we do have some really good treatment strategies that hopefully you and I will get to today to help people.
And is it also related to, in the same way that I think tendon issues result from some overload that didn't quite heal right and then over time degrades, is that related to the patellofemoral issue as well?
No. So going back to your first point around, you know, that pain means you've got tissue damage, pain is a motivating kind of feeling for you to change behavior. That's what pain is. So you can have patellofemoral joint pain and actually have really healthy knees. So just because even if you've had pain a long time, it doesn't mean that you've got this really awful, you know, degraded, horrible cartilage. It means that that's why we call it patellofemoral pain. You have pain. And so I, you know, spent a long time trying to reassure people about their symptoms and reassure people about their joints so that we can kind of move forward. So I don't want you to think that your knees are really damaged. I want you to think about you've got pain that we can alter, and that's the key part.
Okay, great. So they're sensitive for some reason, and maybe it's
correct.
It's partly in your brain, and it's partly maybe how you move, and partly some weakness in your muscles. And so I guess all of those are a part of what you would go after as you were trying to help somebody get through this. And we're trying to get the pain down and get the strength and the movement better in sort of lockstep so that, you know, they'll do it because it's not hurting as much. And then as they get a little stronger or move a little better, then they can do a little more, and then they can do a little more. And then at some point, yeah, they're back. They're like who they were some years ago. And now you're just having to teach their brains to move properly again when they're not thinking about it, because they've been doing this stiff-legged, not using their knees for so long, they've forgotten how to do that. And so anyway, I wonder if you can kind of walk us through this process of thinking it through, and maybe also, you know, mention that, because maybe for some people it is tendon stuff, and how do you tell the difference? And even if it's not 100%, you know, you as a PhD and a practitioner dealing with patients all the time, how do you tell so that you're giving them the right kinds of things and that sort of thing?
Yeah, so let's walk through the key differences between the patellofemoral joint pain, so the kneecap stuff, and the tendon, and then we might just touch on why we care or why it matters in terms of particularly that way in that I talked about. At the kind of end of rehabilitation, or, you know, when pain is under control, the goals are the same. People want to be strong and springy and active. So for me, the differential diagnosis or the division between what is it is important at the start, because that kind of defines a lot of the advice we give people around when to listen, how much to push, how much to not push, that sort of thing. Yeah. So the first thing to go through is that the tendon at the front of the knee, the patella tendon, we use that as a spring when we jump and land and do really big lunging changes of direction like tennis and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So when we run or when we cycle, we're actually not using our patella tendon as a spring. So I would be really confident based on your sport that you do that it's not patella tendinopathy, even from what you've just told me. It is far more likely to be patellofemoral joint pain. Yeah. So we can know from the activities that people are reporting. So one of the things I might ask someone with anterior knee pain, both of those conditions can hurt when they jump. So what I might do is try and differentiate between what doesn't hurt. So someone with tendon pain, it doesn't hurt to cycle because you're not using your patella tendon as a spring. So even though both of those use your muscles and use your joint, anything where you use your tendon in a really fast, dynamic way, that's where we load the tendon. So same with running. I can say to someone with anterior knee pain, does it hurt to, you know, jog in a straight line? Well, that can really bother someone with a sensitive patellofemoral joint, but it won't bother someone with patella tendinopathy. So the devil's in the detail a little bit between those two. The other key thing, Joe, is that with the patella tendon, the pain is quite focal, and I'm not talking about pain to poke it or to touch it. I'm talking about pain when they load. It's really at the junction between their kneecap and the tendon at the front, whereas the patellofemoral joint can be vague. It can move around. It can ache a lot more. The location can vary depending on what you're doing. So if you're cycling versus running versus walking versus doing something at the gym, you might find that the kneecap pain feels, you know, underneath your kneecap, or sometimes it's on the inside, or sometimes it's just, you know, that vague whole knee ache. So the pain location really distinguishes them as well as the pain, the aggravating loads, the aggravating exercise.
Mm-hmm. And is there a difference in like how the pain presents? It gets better over time as you exercise, or it gets worse as you exercise?
Yeah, that's a good question. So tendons tend to warm up. That's a really characteristic feature, whereas patellofemoral joints can get worse, can get better. They can be a little bit random, which can be frustrating for the people attached to the joint because sometimes they are not sure whether or not they should push on that day or pull back. But, yeah, they present differently. So the patella tendon, it's very focal at that bottom part of the kneecap. It warms up and you only have that pain with high tendon load, so really fast spring-like activity. Patellofemoral joint pain, sometimes people aren't even sure what changed. I don't know why I've got this. It's come from nowhere, which is in contrast with tendon. Tendons, people can usually pinpoint a change in load. So, I got picked for the state volleyball team and I've had 6 training this week, and in every training session we jump 300 times. There's a really substantial increase in load. Whereas patellofemoral joints can be a bit of a mystery, so people can try and manage them themselves for a long time because it comes and goes. You know, I feel pretty good today, so I'll try going for a run. Oh, no, I still felt it. So as you said before, people tend to rest, and then rest actually just reduces your capacity. Then when you go back to try and do the same amount and you don't think you're doing overload, you don't think you're doing too much, it's overload for your new relative capacity because you've reduced the amount you can do due to rest. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah. It's the same story I hear about everything. It's like how to make your back feel better and all.
Yeah.
It's the same kind of pattern. Rest does not heal you. It might make you feel better in the short run, but you now are also weaker and you've got to get stronger progressively and without injuring yourself again, or you're right back to where you started.
Spot on. And so, you know, some strategies that I might give someone then with patellofemoral joint pain is the first thing I want to do is teach them about why exercise is really important if they don't come from a background of doing a lot of exercise. Because, you know, you think about it, if you're not used to being really physically active and I give you a program and you get some muscle soreness, you might think, oh my gosh, is that meant to happen? Is that safe? And yeah. So we shouldn't ever presume that people know why we're doing something. And so it's really good to come up with that program together. So I'd say to you, okay, we're going to give you a program for your calf. And that's because your calf is so important. When you're walking around, your calf absorbs 60% of your landing energy. So every step you take, that calf is taking 60%. If your calf is not very good, the next place that load goes is your knee. So even walking around, we can really unload your knees by increasing your calf. So that's why I'm going to give you some calf work, because your calf is so important. Then we're going to give you some work for the front of your leg, your quadricep, and that's because we know it's really important in how it controls, you know, the loads that go through your kneecap. But we're going to make sure it's pain-free, because every time you do an exercise and it's really sore, it's hard for you to get stronger because your brain's kind of telling your muscle not to work. So those strategies that we might give you for your quadriceps, for your thigh muscle, it might also involve some different taping techniques. So there's a diamond tape that we use where we kind of smush the quad muscle down a little bit and we smush the bottom part up a little bit so that the kneecap sort of sits up. So this is not related to kneecap tracking. I'm not taping over the front of the knee. I'm just kind of trying to lift the kneecap off the back of the joint so it's not so irritating. And I can send you a link for a video because it's a really great one for people to try.
Yeah, and that's just like lowering the pain. That's great.
Yeah. Because sometimes you just need a way in. Like you're telling me, you know, you're telling me, physio, that I need to exercise and I'm on board, but what you're giving me hurts. So I'm going to need a strategy to overcome that so that I can get on top of this. Otherwise, you're just banging your head against the wall.
That is great. And this process of, you know, going down as low as you have to, maybe not any lower in terms of your activity level because you don't want to lose any more than necessary. But you got to get down however far you go down in order to get the pain to where you can start to work through it. And then as you get stronger, you can do more with the same low level of pain.
Yes.
Anyway, this takes some time. There's some progression here. I'm understanding that you often tend to focus on like isolated things, you know, like doing a calf raise, but eventually you'll progress up to maybe more functional type things like a squat. And you also like single leg work rather than double for an important reason. Will you tell us about it?
Absolutely. So the reason that we start with really isolated work is that if you have a problem or if you have a deficit specifically in some muscles in your leg and I give you an exercise is on two legs, you will naturally unload that side and you won't even realize you're doing it. And so you'll spread the load across the joints.
Yeah.
So if you have a specific reduction in your quad and your calf and your glute, then I'd give you really targeted exercise to address those before we put it together in a sort of functional exercise. The reason I give you single leg but each leg is twofold. As a human, we actually do almost everything one leg at a time in a repeating manner. So running is a series of hops. So what I need to do is make sure each leg is independently strong and springy before I return you to run, because otherwise you're just going to be exposed. So we need each leg to be independently strong just as humans, let alone for any, you know, athletic endeavors we want to do. The second reason is called cross-education, and this is a really great little brain tool for all of the listeners to be aware of, cross-education. So when you exercise one leg, you actually transfer some strength over onto your other side. So let's just say you have right-sided knee pain and you're actually really struggling to do your right-sided exercise. What I would say to you is go as heavy as you can on your left. Now, people think, oh my gosh, I'm going to be asymmetrical. Well, honestly, you will get to symmetry faster because your brain transfers some strength over onto your right side. So on your left side, for the exercises that you've been given by your strength coach or your physio or that you're doing yourself, go as heavy as you can. And that is counterintuitive to what you're thinking. But otherwise, Joe, it goes back to the point you made before. What we do is detrain our left side because we actually put less load through it. And we reduce the capacity of our good side, thinking that we're helping our body be symmetrical, but all we're doing is actually getting further and further away from where we need to be. Whereas if you train each side as hard as it can cope in terms of its capacity and your strength and your symptoms, you'll actually get there quicker. So that's my gift to you, cross education.
Fantastic. Yeah, I've heard of that before, but never explained so clearly. So thanks for that. So give me, you know, just some examples of, like, for the knee pain that I have, the kinds of things that, you know, like calf raises, the quad extension, and maybe not go all the way as a straight leg, but just use the range of motion that I can do with the, you know, whatever the pain level, you know, try to do it with the range of motion that doesn't give me pain, that sort of thing.
Spot on. Okay. So we've actually got two parts to our calf and we use them differently. So if you think about going upstairs where your knee is quite bent, you predominantly use the lower part of your calf. Same with when you're walking around. If you think of coming downstairs where your knee's straighter, you use far more the top. So people would have heard of their gastroc and soleus. So we need to make sure we train both of those independently. So the sort of exercises that are really good for patellofemoral joint pain, number one, seated, single leg, calf raise. So you might use the calf raise machine at the gym, or you can actually sort of drag a bench over and face something like a leg extension where you've got the bolster and you can put that on the top of your thigh and you can do a calf raise using that. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So we've got our seated single leg. Remember, single leg but each leg. So I want you to do whatever you can do on each side. I don't care if your weights are different. In fact, they're likely to be, but that's okay. Right. I want you to push hard on each side.
Yeah.
Then I would give you standing, weighted calf raise. And again, with whatever you could do on each side, you might be using a Smith machine or something so that you're not trying to balance at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
We also need quite a bit of calf endurance. So in addition to the strength work I've given you, I'd probably give you calf raises just with body weight at night before bed, so you've got the whole night to recover. And your technique's really important.
And these are standing now?
These are standing. So okay. This is holding on for balance, standing single leg, where the middle of your ankle joint is going up nice and straight, so it should line up with the middle of your second toe. So we've got a fair bit in for the calf. We're not even at the knee yet, but they're so important. I can't emphasize enough.
But not straight legged, you said, with a little bend in the knee?
No, so the standing ones are both straight legged,
okay.
No bend. Yep, and the seated is purposefully bent.
Okay, good.
Beautiful. Now, all of that work would help you whether or not, even if you don't know what your knee pain is, even if you don't know if it's patellofemoral joint or patella tendon, because of how critical the calf is, I would give that to either knee pain.
That's great.
That's good for anyone with knee pain. Then as we go into the quadriceps, if I'm talking about patella tendinopathy, then they won't have pain doing leg extension because it's not fast.
Mm-hmm.
So with their leg extension, they can do isometric, so a static. They can do isotonic, so through range. But it's nice and slow and it's not painful. So they could just load up, you know, get going single leg but each side. If you have patellofemoral joint pain, that can be painful, that exercise.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where I'd modify something. I'd say modify your range first. So what I mean by that is go as heavy as you can through whatever range is pain-free, even if the range is really limited. So don't worry about going from 90 all the way up to straight. If you can do heavier with a smaller range, do it because you'll see far more gains quicker.
And as much as I can for each leg, even if it's different.
Correct.
Okay.
Spot on. And it will be different. And what you also need to consider is whether or not something like the taping technique that I talked about means you can do your gym pain-free. So for some of the older athletes or any of the people that I see, they tape for, say, walking around if their knees are a bit achy, or they tape for the gym, but they actually don't tape to do their ride. So it's fine to use these tools as a tool for when and if you need it. There's no rules.
Got it. Well, this has been really great. I wonder if we could, if I could just kind of, as we're running short of time here, I want to kind of hit you with a few things and you can say yes, no, or, oh, that one's really complicated. We can't have time for that.
Sure.
Are we pushing into pain? If I'm doing an exercise that is supposed to help me, but the problem is that it hurts, if I can stand the pain, is that okay? I should do it anyway? Or should the pain be a, you know, is there like a, whether it's a affecting what I'm trying to heal or it's affecting my brain and I want to watch out for that, should I just not suffer that much and build up?
Yeah, it's a great question. And the way I would answer that would be, I am comfortable if people have low and stable symptoms. So what I'm saying is, just say you went for a ride or you're at the gym and you said, yeah, I could feel it a little bit. It was probably a 2 or 3. Did it get worse? No. Were you worse that night or the next day? Because just say you go and do a ride and your knees aren't too bad, but that actually impacts your training for 4 more days.
Yeah.
Then we need to adjust what was okay for you at the time. So some people, they get a lot of information at the time and some people don't know about it until later. So what I do is work with you and say, what's the consequence? So if you have low and stable symptoms and the next day you're good to go again, fantastic. Let's crack on. That's really safe. Mm-hmm. But if you've done a load at the gym or done a load in your training that it's really impacted the next couple of days, then let's just work out how we can bring you back slightly to not have such a consequence to that exercise.
All right. So let me try to make sure I understand that, that if it's hurting me while I'm doing it, and then the consequence is that the pain is going to continue for a while and it's going to affect me for the next set of workouts, then that's too much.
That's too much on Alter.
But if it hurts me, but then I'm still fine for my next workout, then maybe that was okay.
Yeah, I'm happy with that. And that can often take, you know, often that's also using people's own like beliefs around pain and their experience and how much they're willing to put up with. So some people I need to pull back and say, actually, I think, you know, we should try and reduce. But some people you actually need to reassure them and say, a little bit of awareness during that exercise is actually super safe. You're not doing any damage. Let's go.
Okay. And so maybe this also relates to painkillers. If I'm killing the pain and it's allowing me to work hard, maybe it's allowing me to work too hard. So the question, I guess it would always come back to, if the pain is now worse for my next workout, then that was a mistake.
So if people are working with their doctor or their pharmacist, or they're self-medicating because they have a really good plan and a good understanding, then don't use it to get through a training week. Use it to settle down your symptoms and go again.
Okay. Fantastic information. How about ice and heat and straps, you know, braces, any of that stuff worth doing?
Yeah. So things like the ice and heat, I'm totally okay with people trying. We know that it changes skin temperature, which can help our pain. It can change the sensory input from the joint. So if people say to me, it feels great that I ice, or it feels great that I cold plunge, or I really love heat, go for it. And the reason for that is that it won't do any damage and it doesn't cost any money. The problem that I have with a lot of the extra treatments or adjuncts is that braces get really expensive, you know, shockwave, all the stuff we start to do to people adds up and there's not good evidence. So if in the short term you needed some tape to get on top of your pain, to get a really good strength program in, to build back into running, then that's low cost and can help. But stay away from anything expensive. There's no evidence for it. Sure. Ice and heat are totally safe to use and really individual, actually. Some people have a really strong preference for one or the other, and that's fine.
Fantastic. Okay, the last one is noisy knees. My knees crack and they make funny noises when I move them. You know, is that my knee wearing out or being rubbed away?
No, not at all. So we know that joints and knees are so noisy and there's no relationship with damage. We know that it doesn't matter. It actually doesn't matter. It can sound grunting. And what we hear is a really powerful driver of kind of our brain being on alert, you know, vision and auditory input. Our brain really prioritizes and goes, oh my gosh, but I don't want you to panic about your noisy knees. They're fabulous.
Fantastic. Okay, great. This has been exactly what I needed. I just need a path forward, something to believe in, give me hope, but I need to have patience and let my body find its own path, its own time to get me back to what I was. That is great.
And don't panic if you have a couple of flares along the way.
That's a good point.
Far more rather that you continue to be active and we had some slight some slight flares, that we know we've got tools, we know we can manage you, we know we can get you back to where you need to be. So if people are doing their rehab and they think, oh, it hasn't worked, you know, my knee pain is back, that's actually part of the journey. It's never linear and that's okay. You're not doing damage, just stay the path.
Fantastic. Okay, great. Thank you for your time, Dr. Rio. I wonder if you could just tell our audience a little bit about how they could find you online, anywhere that you would want to direct them to find more information.
Well, it's funny. I'm not very good at social media, so I'm not on Twitter or Instagram or anything. I'm recently on LinkedIn. If anyone wants to find me online, you can probably find me through the La Trobe website or through the Australian Ballet Just reach out and I'm happy to chat. Thank you so much for your time.
Oh, great. Yeah, thank you. And I'll put some of the links that I know for the things that you've mentioned and people can find them there. Dr. Rio, thank you so much. I know we had to struggle through some technical issues here today, but you have been a trooper and a tremendous resource for us.
Thank you. That's kind. Thank you so much.
All right. Well, you have a great one.
Yeah, have a good day.
All right, bye-bye.
Thank you so much for listening to my talk with Dr. Ebony Rio. You can find more information about Dr. Rio in the show notes.